This is Ralph Richardson. Our play today is based on another story by Henry James, an author for whom I have an infinite admiration. I've always thought that this was a tale which would dramatize well, and I hope that you will like my choice. Here then is our story by Henry James, The Liar. I first met him at a house party at Stays in the middle of Hertfordshire. I'd been asked down by Arthur Ashmore so that I could paint a portrait of his father, Sir David. It was quite a gathering of us. Most of the faces were new to me that first evening. I remember singling him out from the very first, a handsome, striking figure of a man. What was odd in him was a certain mixture of the correct and the extravagant, as if he were an adventurer imitating a gentleman with rare perfection.
Oh, that's Colonel Capadose. He's been a great deal in India. Isn't he rather celebrated? Oh, perhaps he isn't. But he says he is. And if you think it, well, that's just the same, isn't it?
If you think it?
I mean, if he thinks it, that's just as good, I suppose.
You mean if he thinks he's done things he hasn't?
Oh, dear, no, because I never really know the difference between what people say and... He's exceedingly clever and amusing. Quite the cleverest person in the house. Unless, indeed, you're more so. Well, that I can't tell yet, can I? I only know about the people I know, and I think that's plenty enough.
Enough for them.
Ah, I see you are clever. Enough for me. But I've heard of you. You're a well-known artist, and I know your pictures. I admire them.
Well, they're mostly portraits. What I usually try for is not my own resemblance.
I see what you mean. But they have much more colour. Don't you suppose Van Dyck's things tell a lot about him? And now you're going to do someone here?
I've been invited to do Sir David. I'm rather disappointed in not seeing him this evening.
Oh, he goes to bed at some unnatural hour. 8 o'clock, after porridge and milk. Mm. You know he's rather an old mummy.
Oh, I know he's very old. 90-odd, isn't he? I'm surprised that he's never having had his portrait done before.
Ah, that's because he was afraid, you know. It was his pet superstition. He was sure that if anything were done, he would die directly afterwards.
Ah, I hope I shan't kill it. It was rather unnatural of his son to send for me. It was not until dinner was nearly over that I first caught sight of her, Everina. The Everina I'd loved so deeply these many years ago. The Everina I still love, as I gazed at her, sitting there, so near to them, so beautiful, so very absorbed. Absorbed, unfortunately, in somebody else. She's gazing across the table at Colonel Capadose, as though she were in love with him. Once again, I turned for enlightenment to the lady on my right.
The lady with the profile. Oh, that's Mrs. Capadose.
You mean his wife? That fellow's Everina?
You know her, then?
I knew her once upon a time, when I was living abroad. I knew she'd married, but I didn't even know her married name.
Well, I must say I like her husband better. He gives so much.
No. When I knew her, there was no comparison that could injure her. She was altogether the most delightful thing in Munich.
Mm.
Well, her people lived there. They weren't rich in pursuit of economy, in fact, and Munich was very cheap. She told me she must marry well. It was the one thing that she could do for her family. I suppose you'd say she has married well?
She told you?
Oh, of course. I proposed to her, too. But is she evident to think so herself? I mean that she has married well, or at least to her liking. She never takes her eyes off him. It was only after the ladies had retired that I got a chance to exchange a few words with the Colonel himself. We were talking about the day's run, for all except myself had been out with the foxhounds during the morning. A neighbouring squire had an accident and he'd come a cropper in an awkward place just at the finish, with consequences that looked grave. He'd struck his head and there'd obviously been a concussion of the brain, but he was still insensible. It was this accident which Colonel Capadose proceeded to discount.
Same thing happened to me in Ireland years ago. Pitched out of a dog cart, turned a sheer somersault and landed on my head. They thought I was dead, but I wasn't.
Pass the port, Colonel, will you?
Ah, yes, certainly.
Thank you.
I couldn't help noticing that nobody else at the table seemed to be paying as much attention to my new friend's stories. Not that they'd heard them before, but I was quite fascinated by some of them, which seemed to me almost incredible. Like his story of the friend in India who actually had been buried alive.
Yes, sir. I give you my word of honor. Only in a state of coma, but they clapped him into a coffin and shoved him in the ground.
And they left him there?
He was left there till I came and hauled him out 12 hours later. Oh, by the way, Ashmore tells me who you are. I think my wife used to know you. Didn't you do that portrait of her?
I painted her many times.
Well, it was the sight of that picture you gave her, the one in vine leaves and leopard skin, a regular vacancy, that made me first fall in love with her.
Is that so?
Yes.
As a matter of fact, it was just about the first decent portrait I painted. I'd like to see it again.
Don't ask her to show it to you. She'd feel awkward.
Awkward?
We parted with it in the most disinterested manner. An old friend of my wife's family, the Grand Duke of Silberstadt Schreckenstein, came out of Bombay while we were there and spotted your picture. You know, he's one of the greatest collectors in Europe. Well, he was so enchanted with it, Everina had to give it to him. He was good enough to return the compliment, sent us a magnificent old vase in return for it. We'll show it to you if you come round sometime.
Well, gentlemen, shall we join the ladies?
As we came into the wide saloon, I looked round for Everina. She was sitting by herself at the far end of the room on a small sofa with an empty place beside her. I went over to join her. We began to talk over old times, of all that had happened in the 12-odd years since we'd seen each other.
So you never got married? Oh, but you ought to have done. It's the best thing.
I like that. From you.
Why not from me? I'm very happy. You will see my little girl. She's 9 years old. She's too beautiful.
You must bring her to my studio somewhere. I'd like to paint her.
Oh, don't speak of that. It reminds me of something very distressing. That lovely portrait you did of me. You remember it?
The Vacante? Very well.
It's too awful. We were terribly short of money just after we got married, and I had to sell it. They gave us £200 for it, but I feel so ashamed.
Oh, I know all about that. At least you've the vase to remember it by.
The vase?
Well, the one the Duke gave you in return for it.
The Duke?
Well, the Duke of whatever his name was. Your husband was telling me.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. My husband. Oh, here he is. Darling, Mr. Lyon wants to paint Amy. He says she'll make
she's a charming child. A most interesting little creature. She does the most remarkable things.
Don't tell him. Please don't.
Well, don't tell him what, dear.
What she does. Let him find out for himself.
In due course, the ladies retired, and along with the other men, the Colonel and I stepped into the smoking room for the last cigar. We began to discuss the fine old house in which we were staying, the most irregular, rambling, mysterious mansion in which, so the Colonel informed me, they had now and then discovered a walled-up room or a secret staircase. He also went on to discuss the Ashmore family ghost.
Don't ask me what I've seen. I should tax your credulity. I don't like to talk of these things, but there are two or three rooms here, as bad as any I've known. As for the one at the end of your corridor, well, I shouldn't advise you to sleep there, that's all. You'll get letters of importance the next morning and take the tent retreat.
Well, you mean I'll invent a pretext for running away?
Unless you're braver than almost anyone ever has been. We saw the comedy 3 days ago, the day after we got here. A young fellow was put in that particular room. I forget his name. The house was so full. And the usual constables followed. Letters at breakfast, an awfully queer face, an urgent call to town. So sorry his visit was cut short. Ashmore and his wife looked at each other, and off the poor devil went.
I've never particularly relished the long walk down a haunted corridor with a glimmering candle in my hand, the walk that generally takes one to bed in a mansion as old and as rambling as stays. But it was not that which made me pause for a last word with my host as I left the room.
No, I'm afraid we can't offer you any ghosts. We do our best, but they're difficult to raise. I don't think they like the hot water pipes.
Uh-huh. They remind them too much of their own climate, eh?
Exactly.
But haven't you a haunted room at the end of my passage?
Oh, there are stories. We try to keep them up.
I would rather like to sleep there. Plus, I better wait until I finish my work. Don't want to have to leave hurriedly, like the gentleman 3 days ago.
3 days ago? What gentleman?
Well, the one who got urgent letters at breakfast and fled by the 10:20. Did he stand more than one night?
I don't know what you're talking about. There was no such gentleman 3 days ago.
If I'd had any further doubts about the veracity of Colonel Capadose, they would have been dispelled by the talk I had the following day with Sir David Ashmore. He was a beautiful subject, as well as the serenest and blandest of sitters. And as I worked away at my portrait, he told me what I had been waiting to hear.
Oh, yes. Capadose is quite a remarkable fellow in his way. And a taking dog. But he has that rather monstrous foible.
A monstrous foible?
He pulls the long bow. The longest it ever was. You're lucky not to have had to catch him.
Well, I think I have rather caught him. He revels in the miraculous.
Oh, it isn't always the miraculous. He'll lie about the time of day, about the name of his hatter. It's quite disinteresting.
Well, it's very base.
Oh, it's an extraordinary trouble to take. This fellow isn't himself at all base. There's no harm in him and no bad intention. He doesn't steal, nor cheat, nor gamble, nor drink. He's very kind. He sticks to his wife. He's fond of his children. He simply can't give you a straight answer.
Everything he told me last night was tarred with that brush.
My son tells me that his friends quite allow for it and don't pin him down for the sake of his wife, whom everyone likes.
Oh, his wife. His wife.
I dare say she's used to it.
Never in this world, Sir David. How can she be used to it?
Why, my dear sir, when a woman's fond... And don't they mostly rather handle the instruments themselves? They're connoisseurs in the business. They've sympathy for a fellow performer.
No, no, not this one. I knew her years ago, before her marriage. Knew her well and admired her. She was as clear as a bell.
I like her very much. But I've seen her back him up.
Are you very sure?
Oh, my dear sir, you're in love with her.
Very likely. Heaven knows I used to be.
She must help him out. She can't expose him.
She can hold her tongue.
Before you, she probably will.
That's what I've got to find out. If she doesn't, heaven's above. What he must have made of her. The more I thought of the Colonel and his monstrous poison, the more of a liar I discovered him to be, the more dismayed I became at the loyalty which Everina betrayed for him. How could a woman of her quality live with him day after day? Hadn't she seen, hadn't she felt a smile, a cold, faded smile of complete appreciation go round when her husband perjured himself with some particularly characteristic bluntness? And yet, she would hear no word against him. I was held by my riddle and yet impatient of it. Didn't she lie, after all, when she let her husband's lies pass without turning her hair? Wasn't her life a perpetual complicity? Didn't she aid and abet him by the simple fact that she wasn't disgusted with him? Then again, perhaps she was disgusted. It was merely the desperation of her pride that had given her an inscrutable mark. Well, I loved her. Loved her still. And somehow I had to find out. For if she did despise him in her heart... In due course, the painting of little Amy was completed. And the more I saw of Evelina, who brought her every day to my studio, the more I began to realize how I might solve my riddle. For the desire grew in me to paint the Colonel also, to set him upon a canvas as he really was.
Oliver, you simply can't accept another disliker. The picture of Amy and then a portrait of Clement as well. It's too much.
Well, if you won't accept it as a gift, why not let him sit just for my own pleasure and profit? Let it be a favor, a service that I ask of him. All the generosity will then be on your side. It'll do me a lot of good to paint him, and the picture will remain in my hand.
Well, everything in him is very noble.
Ah, trust me to bring everything out. Everything.
I think it would induce you to let you cry into me.
Oh, me. I could be you in the dark. The Colonel shortly afterwards placed his measure at my disposal. The sittings for the portrait began. How I did it, I couldn't have told you. But I felt a miracle of method freshly revealed to me at every sitting. It was in the eyes, it was in the mouth, it was in every line of the face. And the way the hair was planted, the moustache was twisted. It was the way that he looked out at a bamboozled world. The way that he would look out forever. The way of an inveterate, incorrigible liar. As it turned out, he liked to sit and liked to talk while sitting, which was very fortunate, as his talk was half the inspiration of the artist. I had an example of that one day when an out-of-work model forced her way in on it in search of a job.
I thought you might have something for me next week.
Well, I haven't. In any case, how did you get into the garden?
The gate is open, sir. The servants' gate. The butcher's cart is there.
Well, the butcher ought to have closed it.
Then you don't require me, sir. Well, you know, you have had me in the past.
I don't remember you.
Well, I dare say the people who saw your pictures do. If you ever need me, just send a postcard to Miss Geraldine, Morton of Teddy's News, Notting Hill.
Oh, very, very well, I remember. But I can't hold out any hopes. I'm so busy with the portrait.
Yes, I see you are. I wish I was in the gentleman's place.
Now, that'll do. Go along with you. Get along. And close the gate as you go out.
The model there. Have you ever painted her?
Not in the world. I've never seen her. She's quite wrong.
She was very pretty 10 years ago. And she's no model. That's all a pretext.
A pretext?
Yeah. She didn't want me. She wanted me.
I noticed she paid you some attention. What does she want?
Well, to do me an ill turn. She hates me. She was bad man. Had hold of a friend of mine 10 years ago, a young Japanese who might have been plucked if I hadn't stepped in, a friend of his family. It's a long story. I'd forgotten all about it. I was able to make a diversion and let him get off, after which I sent her about her business. She knew it was me she had to thank. She's never forgiven me. I think she's off her head. Her name isn't Geraldine at all, and I very much doubt if that's her address.
Oh, what is her name then?
Her name's Cherson. Harriet Cherson. I haven't thought of her for years. Quite lost sight of her. I don't know what her idea is, but practically, she's harmless. As I came in, I thought I saw her a little way up the road. Probably waiting for me there now.
A little flights of fancy like that to help me, the portrait almost painted itself. Only a few more sittings were needed for it to emerge a masterpiece that would astonish the world, to show forth the Colonel's inner man for what it was really worth, when the Colonel had to leave town. I gathered that he'd not be back again for some 3 months. Nearly completed as it was, the portrait would have to wait for its finishing touches. Accordingly, I too left town. After a short spell with my brother in the south of England, I planned to go on a holiday to Italy. But before I left the country, I came back to my studio for one last look at the Colonel's portrait.
What is all right, sir? A lady and gentleman called a minute ago, Colonel Strappadoes and his wife. They said they wanted to look at the portrait you've been painting of him. I told them he was away, but they said it would be all right, so I left them in the studio. They're there now.
Well, that's all right, Millie. I'll go and join them. I made my way to the studio with a certain curiosity, wondering vaguely what they were up to. I laid my hand on the curtain to the gallery when I was startled by a noise. A passionate wail. Or rather, a smothered shriek. Accompanied by a violent burst of tears, I peeped cautiously between the curtains and went on listening.
No. No, Daddy.
What is it, darling? What the devil is it?
It's cruel. It's too cruel. It's all there in the portrait.
Hang it, what's all there?
Everything that ought to be. Everything he's seen. It's too dreadful.
Everything he's seen? Why, am I not a good-looking fellow? I'm bound to say it made me handsome.
Handsome? Hideous? Hideous? Not that. Never.
Not what, in heaven's name?
What he's made you. What you know. He knows. He sees. Everyone will. Everyone will know and see. Oh, fancy that thing in the academy.
You're going wild, darling. But if you hate it so, it needn't go.
Ah, he'll send it. It's so good. Oh, come away.
If so,
come away.
Good.
Come away. Come away.
Not that way. Not through the house, to the state you're in. No, this way, through the garden. There's the gate. No, wait a moment. I see.
I went on to Italy for my holiday, and I waited to see what would happen next. Wouldn't the colonel write? Wouldn't he take it for granted that I should find out how he'd served me, how he'd destroyed a portrait on which I'd been working for weeks? After all, my housekeeper had admitted them, him and his wife. There could be no doubt as to who had done the damage. And what about Evelina Shell and the report? That would be the real test, for that would show how far she was prepared to go for her husband. Or for me. I could scarcely wait for our next meeting, when all three of us were back in town. And at last, we met.
I have a confession to make to you. We were in town for a couple of days while you were away, and I made Clement take you to your studio. I wanted so desperately to see what you had done with him, though I knew you'd be angry. We made your servants let us in, and I took a good look at the portrait. It really is wonderful.
Wonderful.
Of course, I know it isn't quite finished, but Clement's so eager to begin the sittings again.
Then you think I've got something?
You've got everything.
Yes, that's right. Just say the word and we'll begin again. You know how I like to see it. You want me animated and it needs me so to wag my tongue. And just now I've time.
Ah, I shall have to begin again. The picture's been destroyed.
No.
Destroyed? But why? What did you do?
I didn't. I found it destroyed. Slashed to bits with a knife.
Oh, I say, what a jolly shame.
I hope you didn't go for it. The time you called.
Oh, so I could sit for you again. My dear fellow, if I thought of it, I might have.
Oh, you either, Evelina?
I say, my dear, that woman. That woman.
That woman?
Don't you remember? When we came out, she was at the door, all a little way from it. I spoke to you of her. I told you about her. Geraldine, Harriet Pearson, the one who burst in on you that day, saying she was a model. He saw her hanging about. I called Evelina's attention to her.
What, you mean she got at my picture?
She burst in again. She'd learned the way. She was waiting for her chance.
Oh, the horrid.
Let's go down to lunch.
But how in the world did she get in?
We went out to the garden without troubling your servant. I wanted to show my wife. Oh, my dear fellow, I can't have been guilty of the folly of not fastening the door.
Well, I'm sure I don't know, Colonel. It was a very determined hand that did that deed in the spirit of a wildcat.
Well, she is a wildcat, confound her.
Oh, it's too bad. The fates are against you. Throwing off masterpieces like that for nothing.
You did like it? Really?
Oh, Chatham Rich, I loved it.
I see. And you also saw this woman of the Colonel's?
Yes. She was going away from us. She crossed the road.
I see. And did she appear to recognize the Colonel? Did she look round?
Yes. She looked round. But I didn't notice much. A hansom came along and we got into it. It wasn't till then that Clement told me who she was. I remember he said that she was there for no good. I suppose we ought to have gone there.
Yes. It would have saved the picture. Perhaps.
For you, Shammy, I am very sorry. But you must remember, I possess the original.
So, she was still in love with a man of her choice. And since she couldn't redeem him, she would adopt and protect him. So had he trained her. This is Ralph Richardson again. This week, in our play based on Henry James' tale, The Liar, the cast included James McKechnie as the Colonel, Isabel Dean as Everina, his wife, together with Thea Wells, Philip Ray, John Casaubon, and Anne Goodwin. Well, I shall look forward to the pleasure of your company next week when I shall introduce another play. Until then, au revoir and thank you.
Sir Ralph Richardson starred in today's transcribed program. The script was by Derek Patmore. The music was under the direction of Sidney Torch. Theatre Royal is produced and directed by Harry Allen Towers.
We hope that you've enjoyed this recording, and for more happy listening, please visit otrcat.com.